Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to Right Here in Mass. This week's guest is Matt Nurnberger, the founder of Grand Ten Distilling, a distillery located in Boston that he started because of a love of spirits and, just like you, enjoying a nice drink at the end of the day. Grand Ten's mission is to create distinctive products to satisfy the growing number of savvy New England cocktail drinkers. Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Please share more with our audience more about you and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Matt from Grand Ten Distilling. I founded the company back in 2011. And like you said, it really is an interesting time. You know, I've gone back to business school in 2008 at Babson. And with a focus on entrepreneurship, I knew I wanted to start something, but I wasn't sure what that was. The housing crash kind of came along and, you know, I thought, well, if there's an opportunity to do something on my own, now is the time. And I kind of took that time at Babson as almost like an incubator process to think about what company am I most like interested in pursuing. And, you know, really the passion of spirits and like at the time, craft spirits were fairly new, seemed like an excellent opportunity.
And so what was that process like of just being able to start Grand Ten back in 2011, almost 12 years ago at the time of this recording?
Yeah, so it was, right, of course, like starting any business, it was exciting and very nervous at the time and like venturing into the unknown, but having this vision in your head of like what's possible. And, you know, there's a lot of work as with any business, but when you kind of start out with the business on your own, there's things you expect that happen. There's things that you expect that don't happen. And then there's things that you didn't expect that happen. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of being able to take each of those things and break them down and figure out what do I need to do to be able to overcome this obstacle or this hurdle. Do I have the skill set necessary? If I don't, can I learn it? Or is it something that I need to go out and find? And so in a certain way, like Babson was able to prepare me for some of that, but there's a lot in business that isn't covered in business school.
Mm. And so with that, did you have prior experience at the distillery or were you totally new to the game with that? And if so, what was that like of just understanding the industry and how you could end up creating something on your own?
Yeah, so I came from an engineering background, so I had like at least a scientific understanding of how distillation worked. As I was working on the business plan, realized that there was a technical expertise that I was missing, you know, really like a chemistry, biology piece that was not as strong in. Thankfully for me, my cousin just finished his PhD in chemistry from the University of Virginia and agreed to come on to the distillery. So kind of with him in tow, I felt that really our skill sets complemented each other. Even though we were related, we still had like a different approach to things, a different attitude towards problems and working through those. In a lot of ways, we were very lucky that we were able to get along and match each other so well.
Mm, absolutely. And when you started Grand Ten, what was the process like of just building it up and being able to get seen in front of new customers and just really be able to build that brand awareness and attract people into the space?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. It's, you know, you start with an idea and, you know, like that saying goes, like, you know, any good thing is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration, right? And so you have that spark and then you get busy working behind it and you build the brand out, you build the design out, you build the product out, you dump a ton of effort into it and you get it out there and then you get it in front of people and you hope that they're just as excited about it as you are. And then it's not just that initial, but then you, you know, in some ways it's like you're like a musical artist, like a rock star or something, because every day you're out there singing the same song, right? Even though maybe you're tired of hearing yourself talk, right? You're meeting somebody and you're talking to them for the first time, and you need to be able to give them all that enthusiasm that you had for when you first came up with that product, even on that 100th day or 1,000th day, because all your dreams, all your hopes, all your effort is like tied into that, and you want to be able to see that product grow. And you know, in a lot of ways, like, people buy into it because they buy into you.
Yes,
they buy into that excitement.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's so important to make sure that that humanity ultimately shows through the brand that you're building. And like you said, get people as excited about your product as you are about your product, and really being able to build that brand loyalty and that loyal customer base ultimately.
That's the goal.
And talk to us more about what the process of, like, of actually being able to create the spirits, in terms of maybe like taste testing or finding the right combinations that would really adhere to the palates of the Boston area and what people are really looking for.
Yeah. So we make like a lot of different stuff here. We do whiskeys, gins, vodkas, rums, liqueurs. And Wireworks was one of our first Wireworks. American gin is one of our first products that we put out. And we put out a gin because, you know, to start out of the gates, we could have put out a vodka, which is definitely the most popular spirit in America. At least it was at the time. But the problem with vodka is it's kind of supposed to be flavorless and tasteless. And we felt that it was difficult to establish ourselves on flavor and taste with a product that is supposed to be like as clean as possible. And so instead we chose gin. Both Spencer and myself, our grandparents, were big gin fans. And so gin cocktails were in the house growing up, gin and tonics and martinis. I remember my parents and my grandparents enjoying, as I was heading up through the ages. And so with gin, it's interesting because there's so many different flavor levers that you can pull, right? There's so many different tweaks that you can make to it. And so we kind of started out with this idea of what we wanted in a gin and how we thought we could get there. And it was trial and error repeatedly. We had a giant spreadsheet, a giant matrix of different botanicals, different amounts of these botanicals. And every day it was another distillation. And then we taste and we taste through. We build up, you know, improving each recipe off the previous recipe, trying more of this, less of that. Initially, we thought that we, you know, wanted to tie into Massachusetts by the use of rose hips, right? Which is, you know, like beach plums that grow on the Cape. But we found that during the distillation process, it kind of gave the gin like a, almost like an aspartame-y aftertaste, like a taste of like diet gin, which, yeah, right. It's not something that wasn't a positive flavor that we're looking for, right? So we figured out that that wouldn't work. But we came across another ingredient, right? Cranberries. And the cranberries really gave the gin like a fantastic acidity to it. It didn't taste like cranberries, but it really like gave it like a very nice whole mouth feel. So we integrated the cranberries into the gin. And I feel like that was a, you know, it tied it back into Massachusetts and New England and being a regional gin, but still having like world-class flavor. So it took us about 50 different iterations. We brought in other people along the way to, you know, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Tasting spirits like in a experimental way isn't as much fun as maybe everybody thinks it is. Not everything tastes delicious. of course, when you find something that is extra delicious, you know, that's enjoyable. You want to take it home, but you realize there's only so much of it. So
And I love that you incorporated cranberries. I mean, the part of Massachusetts I live in, which is Middleborough, is literally called like cranberry country. And I have a bog in my backyard. So I think it's just exactly like you said, just being able to incorporate that touch of Massachusetts into your drinks is something that people really end up resonating with and really end up enjoying because of that hometown feel.
Yeah, I felt like we were really able to kind of match the idea of like terroir for spirits and stay like local without being too, you know, local at a sacrifice for quality, right? I think that there's some other products that maybe like, oh, we're super local and, you know, they're not able to kind of reach a world class level of product by limiting themselves to just local stuff. So I feel like we walked that line very well.
Absolutely. And have you incorporated other local flavors into your drink since then? And if so, I'd love to hear about them.
Yeah, well, so continuing with cranberries, we did come up with a cranberry liqueur. It's called Craneberry. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but the early settlers that first developed the cranberry in Cape Cod used to call them craneberries because the blossom of the cranberry looks like a crane hunting on the bog. So we decided to name that spirit Craneberry as a nod to them. And that is a delicious cranberry liqueur that's aged in used Cabernet barrels. So, you know, a little bit of local, a little bit of a far away. In addition to that, we tie into some history as well too. So it's not just local flavors, but we also tie into local history. We have a Medford rum product, which is kind of recreating the original Medford rum, which was made by the Daniel Lawrence and Sons in Medford, Massachusetts. And at the time was considered one of the best rums in the world. The distillery in Medford existed from the colonial times right up until like pre-prohibition. And they say that Paul Revere stopped at the distillery on his midnight ride for just a wee dram to warm him up. So we try to tie in a little bit of ingredients, a little bit of history. You know, try to make it all work. We have another product that's called North County Apple Brandy, and that uses nothing but apples from the North County, which is the region of Massachusetts where most of the orchards are. So we bring those apples in, we crush them up, and we ferment them into apple cider and then distill it into apple brandy, where it ages for about 4 years. So, you know, we try to stay like local and touch on local stuff, but still kind of compete in that top shelf environment.
I love that. This episode of Right Here in Mass is brought to you by Melissa J. Pond, LLC. Is your mission-driven organization struggling to secure funding or communicate your strategy effectively? Meet Melissa J. Pond, LLC, an expert in grant writing, strategic planning, and visual storytelling with over 15 years of experience in the nonprofit and government sectors. Recognized with multiple professional awards, Melissa can help create lasting change and improve the lives of those you serve. Connect with her today at melissajpond.com to see how she can add value to your organization. That's melissajpond.com. And when people are going into Boston or they're in the city already and they're thinking of visiting a distillery, what would you say sets Grand Hen apart from others in the city?
Well, we're very urban, right? So we're easy to get to on the T. We're one of the few distilleries that you can get to on the T. So it's a quick ride on the Red Line from wherever you're at, and you can hop off at Broadway or Andrews and walk about 10 minutes and we're here. It's also, you step right out the front door and look to the left and there's downtown, right? We're about a mile from downtown Boston, which is incredible. It is like a little bit of a speakeasy, kind of. We're tucked away on like a smaller alley. And I think when people search us out and find us, they feel like they've uncovered a treasure. You know, we're treat our customers very well, and we offer something that is very unique, cocktails only. There's no beer or wine. It's all spirits, and it's all spirits that are made here in house. So if there's something that the bartenders kind of want to use that we don't make, we kind of set out to create that for the bar as well too. So there's a list of ingredients that are kind of the only place you're going to find them in the world is behind the bar here at Grand 10. And so, you know, in some ways that's completely different than your standard bar you'd find anywhere else, where everything that they want, they can go out and purchase. And they have a limited ability to make things there. They really can't distill alcohol, right? You need to be a distillery to do that. So, so in that sense, you know, we do offer the customer something extremely unique.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that this is what a lot of breweries specifically do, but they'll partner with other businesses to brew a special beer, or like even just have food trucks on site. How do you partner with other businesses in the area as well?
Yeah, so we have had a lot of success in partnering with other businesses. We partnered, our first one was probably Taza Chocolates in Somerville. We made a product called Fire Puncher Black, which was a spicy, chocolatey vodka using the Taza nibs and shells from them. And that product was very popular, and we still sell it out of the distillery today. Most recently, we've partnered with Fazenda from Coffee Roasters, and we make a coffee liqueur using their coffee, which is exquisite. It's very delicious. I enjoy it a lot. And then on like a local side, right, we use Buenos Empanadas, which is a local company that we sell their empanadas here at the distillery as like a part of a food offering. Like, we have other peers in the alcoholic space. At the beginning of COVID, there were a bunch of breweries that received that excess beer, right? Because all the restaurants and bars were closed. And so all those sales channels had closed down. We worked with a couple of them. Most recently, we launched a product with Lord Hobo, where we brought in a bunch of their old beer and we redistilled it into a spirit, which aged for about 3 years now. And we just recently released, it's called Meat and Potatoes. And I mean, it's whiskey, but officially it's not whiskey because there were hops in the distillate or in the mash. So once hops were in the mash, the it couldn't officially be called a whiskey. So it's called a distilled specialty spirit, but essentially it tastes like a whiskey, like with a little bit of a hop note. And so in that way, we were able to, you know, take a company's waste that they had no need for and like turn it into something of value. And that was kind of a fun project that we were able to do with those guys.
Absolutely. And with the spirits that you have, I know that you do a mix of both local and non-local ingredients and flavors, but how do you get inspiration for those spirits as well? Do you look at what might be popular with other distilleries or take into consideration what your customers are requesting and interested in?
A little bit. You know, we try to listen to the customers. And I think, like, as far as the cocktail bar is concerned and like the cocktails that we're putting out, it's definitely what's on trend now. For the spirits that we put out, we try to be like a little bit in front of that. I feel like once the trend hits, it's too late to the game to get into it. Right. So we have some new products now that are coming out. That we think are kind of on the edge of what's going to be popular, what's going to be hot. And, you know, let's see if we're right. We make some spirits that we only sell in the distillery, and those are a lot of fun to play with because we can be extremely experimental on them. For example, we have another one of our fire punchers is Fire Puncher Añejo, which is a fire puncher spicy vodka aged in tequila barrels. Right, a lot of fun. Tequila is extremely hot right now, and being a distillery in Massachusetts, it's tough to make tequila because we don't have any agave, and we're also not in Mexico. So, but we can participate in the trend right now by putting out a product that was aged in tequila barrels. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything. I think you just kind of got to listen to the market, listen to the customers, and look at other segments and seeing what are the popular flavors that are coming up, and is there an opportunity for that in my segment?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I've noticed become more popular over the past few months are zero proof cocktails. Is that something you might have thought about, is doing any type of zero proof spirit or anything along those lines?
We've messed around with that a little bit. Zero Spirit is like really right at the front of the trending right now. And I think it's like still a little bit outside of, the technology capability that we have here, and the methodology that's used to make that. There's ways to do it that come out okay. It's kind of like, I think the difference between, if I were to speculate here, like the difference between like a veggie burger and like an impossible meat burger. Right, both of them are vegetarian. One of them tastes like a veggie burger and one of them tastes almost like a real burger. And I think that we're able to make the veggie burger now, but we're not able to kind of figure out how to capture the deliciousness of Wireworks gin in a non-alcoholic format. We haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned that you're coming up with new products right now. Is there anything else that's currently in the works that we'll be launching soon that you're excited about or something that you could share?
Yeah, we are getting ready to launch a new gin. It's called Wireworks Black Lemon. So it is it's using an ingredient that we found recently that, is kind of fascinating. It's the idea of these black lemon gins, so these black lemons that we want to incorporate into the gin. So the flavor is like phenomenal on black lemons, and we spent some time figuring out how to get that flavor into the gin. We reworked the botanicals to complement those flavors, and we're really excited about it.
Awesome. And do you end up doing anything like seasonally, like as of this recording, it's middle of April. Do you plan anything for summer or even the other seasons, depending to kind of like incorporate that local flavor and seasonality?
Here at the bar, absolutely. We will have like a little bit of, seasonal menu, cocktail menu that comes out that definitely highlights the flavors in the seasons. For the summertime here, we don't have anything planned just for like a season or release for the summer. I think we do have some stuff that's in the work for the fall. We potentially have a fall gin that we're really excited about that, grab some of those notes that maybe you'd find in the fall that you wouldn't naturally associate with gin, and integrate those into the spirit. So I don't have more to say about it yet. So I'm going to hold those cards a little bit closer to my chest.
To be determined. And I know that at Grand 10, you personally wear so many different hats. And so I'd love to hear, and if you could share with our listeners, how you juggle it all, being one person and having your hands in so many different parts of the company.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's it keeps things interesting. There's always a fire to put out, so things don't get too monotonous. Things just stay fresh. Part of it fits probably my personality, and like my work ethic, and the ability to conquer tasks that are boring, and then move on to something a little bit more exciting. So it's like a little bit of, it's a little bit of everything. I think that's what I enjoy the most, right? The fact that it is, it's like one day you're working on label design, the next day you're doing product formulation, and then in between all that, you're doing sales and maybe a little bit of accounting. Then you're doing some paperwork, and then you have to figure out some like legalese of a lease or an equipment agreement. It's the best. It's, jack of all trades kind of job.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I always love asking businesses about who have a physical storefront or a physical space is how they actually knew that space was the right fit, because there's so many factors that go into it, between accommodations and location and all of that stuff. So how did you know that where you are now was the right spot to call home?
Well, you know, the tricky thing is that it wasn't like an unlimited choice. So we had a few options that were available to us. A lot of it was, as I'm sure like many home buyers for the past 10 years have felt, like when they go out to look to purchase a home or to rent a spot, you kind of see what's out there and what's available and will it fit your needs. I felt like we got really lucky with our spot here in South Boston. We're in an industrial section, but we're still on like the still on the T, which was really important for us. We have the ability for large trucks to come in and do deliveries and take things out, but we're still accessible on foot. So, you know, a lot of ways we rolled the dice and we came up pretty good. There's some things that are missing, I would say. Like, if you were to ask me two things that I could change about our current location, it would be, you know, storefront, like a nice right on the street, where people, when they walked by, they naturally saw us. Of course, we'd lose some of that speakeasy charm. And the other part would be, you know, some better freight load dock capabilities where it'd be easier to unload and load the trucks. I mean, we can do it now, but it's not the best. But I mean, all in all, like to be able to come up with a spot here in South Boston and be a part of the neighborhood here and the community has been really great and very important.
Absolutely. Do you think there potentially could be plans in the future to add another location, or are you really focused on where you are now and just kind of making the one really great as it is?
I mean, I think that there's always always an opportunity to scan the, you know, horizon and see what other opportunities exist. Right now, I think we want to stay here. You know, the neighborhood's changing fast and we want to be a part of that as long as we can. Obviously, we're not building owners, so we have limited control over, you know, over everything, including, you know, our lease. And but I think given the opportunity, we'd like to stay here and continue to grow with the neighborhood. At the same time, we're definitely interested in other opportunities outside of our location here, you know, whether that's like a smaller pop-up spot or something like a little bit different.
Very cool. And for anyone who might be listening, who's potentially thinking about starting their own distillery, what advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's still an expanding industry. There's still lots of opportunity out there. I would say read a lot. You know, read what current people have done, read what people who have tried and failed in the past have done, read about the trends, read about what people are drinking nowadays, read about how they're drinking. Like the RTD market has exploded incredibly in the past 2 years, and that wasn't something that was even, you know, a market when we started the distillery. So it's changing. It's changing fast. I'd say what the most important thing to do is to develop a clear idea of what you hope to achieve and how you hope to achieve it, and stay focused on that path. That's not to say like don't look for opportunity to come along, but I think sometimes too many people get involved in a project that is like sexy from the outside, distillation or brewing, and don't have like a clear image that they're working towards. And that sometimes those are some of the companies that struggle the most.
Yeah. And that's a good piece of advice too, is kind of just like researching as much as you can, chatting with people who've done it before, and then also having that sense of reality for it, where what goes into it is so much more than what people visibly see ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, it's you put in a lot, and you know, I don't think everybody always sees what goes on behind the scenes.
Exactly. And a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs as well. And so some of them I know just from people that I know in the area have gone through Babson's program, and some of them are contemplating it. And so I'd love, if you're comfortable sharing this, if you could share your experience with the program, what you enjoyed with it, and how it could benefit other entrepreneurs who are thinking of taking that same journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think Babson was great. It definitely helped me transition from, you know, where I was in engineering, like over to business. My peer group was fantastic. I think one of the downsides that I felt after the fact was that I was already living in Boston when I started at Babson, and that. Kind of reflecting on it afterwards, I was like, oh, if I'd moved to a new city and didn't know anybody, I think I would have gotten even more out of Babson. Like, so many of my classmates were fresh into Boston, right? So for me, I already had a social network here. I already had, you know, family and friends. And so my time outside of Babson was spent with those people. And my classmates. Whereas with some of my classmates, it was really just spent with each other. And when you get a group of entrepreneurs together and form connections, is how you like create even better business. So, you
Absolutely.
know, in some ways, I felt like I missed out on being local, but in other ways, it gave me the opportunity to be an ambassador to the city. And for my classmates to show them the things that aren't in the guidebooks about our city here in Boston. Yeah, I would 100% do it again. One of the things, right, Grand 10 was born, the idea of Grand 10 was born in Babson. And I think that that was great for Grand 10 and great for me. I would suggest to other people, like, don't be hesitant if you don't have your idea going into, you know, entrepreneurial business school. That's not a negative. You know, you're gonna hear lots of ideas, and there's gonna be lots of fleshing around that happens there. But if you do have your idea, sometimes, like, if you're passionate about your idea and you just want to make sure to put it off on the best foot, that could be the best thing for you, is to take it through business school. Because it's really going to be given the stress test, and when you come out, you should know your path is clear.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. If you were to have to pick a handful of your favorite local businesses, what would you say they are?
Oh man, that's
It's a tough question.
yeah. So, I mean, here in Southie, I'd definitely say like Doughboy Donuts. They're right around the corner. It is like a you know, like a family style donut shop that it competes in the land of Dunkin' Donuts, right? So you can't swing a stick without hitting the Dunkin' Donuts here. But yet every day, like, the line in front of Doughboy Donuts is long. And they do a really great job on customer service and making everybody feel like they're you know, a part of the neighborhood. You know, beyond that, right, I think that it's tough for me to say like any single of the breweries that we work with, because so many of them are so great. But I do appreciate Buenos, our empanada manufacturer, right? Just a small team pumping out delicious empanadas. And like, it's such a fun food. And like, you know, what a great business those guys are. You know, really appreciate that.
Love that. Matt, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really enjoyed learning more about you in Grand 10. And I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Grand 10. And then you can find us on the World Wide Web at www.grand10.com.
Perfect. And I will link to those in the show notes. That way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.